This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Coming back near side, Roy. His shot blocked by Gergensen's. Roy gets the rebound and trying to get the shot away. Ovechkin shoots and scores! And the Capitals are on the board! And it comes from Ovechkin between the dots! Goal number 8, 84! He's 10 from tying Gretzky! It's 2-1 here late in the third period.
John Walton on the call. On 106.7, the Fan, Caps fell to the Tampa Bay Lightning 3-1. And Alex Ovechkin moving one goal closer to tying Wayne Gretzky's all-time goal-scoring record. He lit the lamp with 3:59 left to go in regulation, scoring career goal number 884, 11 away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's record, man. Caps in the midst of a three-game losing streak. Talk about them a little bit more before we get out of here. But goal number 884... scored by our pals over at Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Takeaways real quick from the Caps loss to Tampa Bay. One, nothing to be ashamed of losing to a red-hot Tampa Bay Lightning team. What I do look at here is the Caps, while they still have got a decent cushion atop the East, and in the Metropolitan Division, that lead is getting smaller as they're on a three-game skid, their longest slide of the season, and it's during the midst of an incredible homestand. So a little bit baffling to see the fellas not playing well at home.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little frustrating. They're just the starts have really been the issue.
Yeah.
And they got off to a good one against Tampa, and then it just kind of fell right off. They kind of regressed back to the mean after coming out hot in the break. So it's definitely interesting to see kind of where they're going to go from here. I think that trade deadline's coming up. It's going to be at the end of this week.
Do you expect them to be active? And if so, what is the need?
No, I don't expect them to be active because basically what I've heard from the various pundits and all that, the front office is very weary to mess with the chemistry that we got going right now.
Because
a lot of guys, like TJ Oshie, came out and said, like, this team is closer than the one that won the cup.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's definitely really, really hard to, like, divert anywhere from here. Because if the team's chugging along really well, I mean, you don't want to mess with it. Because they saw Vancouver did this a couple years ago where they made great chemistry and then they made a trade at the deadline and it all just kind of simmered out.
Yeah. Not what we want to see here in our nation's capital. They're in action tonight playing host to Ottawa. You can hear that over on our sister station, the Team 980. Face-off set for 6:30 pregame coverage. Gets going to 6:15 over on the Fan. We'll see how they finish the second half of the season. And as Matt Max just told us, don't expect them to be too active at the trade deadline. It was a super busy weekend in the DMV. It was a super busy weekend nationally as far as the sports landscape goes. I want to reset things here quickly. Obviously, we know the big news of the weekend locally. Deebo Samuel traded from the San Francisco 49ers to the Washington Commanders in exchange for a fifth-round pick. Some other news that we got over the weekend surrounding the Washington Nationals. How did I start the show? Free at last! Free at last. Thank God almighty. We are free at last. Nats getting out of their Masson deal that they've been tied up in over the past several years And I expect the trickle-down effect to be massive in terms of the financials for the Washington Nationals. They're free to negotiate with what we assume will be the Monumental Sports Network as soon as 2026. I think it's great. Grant Paulson tweeted this out a couple hours ago as well. Brett Knight of Forbes also reporting that the Nats are working on selling their ballpark naming rights and a jersey sponsorship.
The learners heard. Learners need money.
The learners heard everyone saying, hey, bro, you going to go out and spend some cheese? Hey, bro, are you going to go out and be aggressive in trying to add to your young talent core? I think the aggressive moves could be coming. The excerpt projects that the Nationals could add $20 million in revenue annually. So a massive, massive day for the Washington Nationals, a group that was scrutinized through the winter, through the early parts of spring here, for not being aggressive, for not going out and spending. Mark Lerner had some comments a couple of weeks ago that we were able to chew on, and he kind of was saying, look, we didn't think the team was in position to go out and make that splash move like they were able to do seasons ago, bringing in a guy like Jason Worth. I continue to argue that while the Lerners are tone deaf at times, I do think their explanation for not being active this summer was interesting. Put it into this context. You're still not ready to compete in my eyes. Now, Lerner used the bad example in the article saying that we should go out and get a big bat. No, dingbat. Kidding, Mr. Lerner. What you really need, guess I can't call the owner of the team a dingbat. It's not good. What you really need is not a bat in your lineup, and you added that with Nathaniel Lowe. Plus, you got gold glove defense to go along with it as well, so that's awesome. But what this team really needs is an ace in their pitching staff, right? I understand the infatuation with young guys like Mackenzie Gore and Jake Irvin. We know Josiah Gray is coming off of a major surgery and some gambling issues. But, you know. Anyways. But I look at it like this. Best case scenario on a championship contending team, and that's how we got to start looking at this group through the eyes of a contender, is Mackenzie Gore and Jake Irving a 1 or 2 starter? Probably not. More like a 3-4, both of those guys. And depending on how damn good your staff is, they may be 4-5. So I do think that is what is needed for this group. They need to go out and get a Max Scherzer, so to speak, which will go down as the best free agent signing maybe in all of Major League Baseball when you consider what they got out of Max Scherzer. But that's the type of move that this team needs to make. And when you get this type of financial freedom, when you add these financial opportunities, I guess is the best way to say it, when you add these type of financial opportunities with now leaving the Masson deal and going out and being able to fish for a big-time TV rights deal that will help expand the amount of money that you can spend year in, year out, I think that's huge. The other thing is this, naming rights. There's a lot of money that comes along with naming rights.
A lot.
A lot of money that comes along with that. So,
especially around here.
Exactly. We're in our nation's capital, for God's sake. So I would have to think that deal is going to garner major, major assets financially as well. And then the other thing is a jersey sponsorship. Now, I know it's something that's become very prevalent in the NBA. I think there's...
NHL's doing it, too.
NHL's got a couple of teams. How many teams in Major League Baseball have a...
That I don't know off the
top of
my
head. Have a jersey right still. I know this. It's the new way to go. It's another way to add money to your system. And I think if you are the Nats and a Nats fan, dude, this is a coup, man. This is a great day to be a Nationals fan. The optimism has got to be through the roof right now, knowing that a team that had been known for being frugal, for a team that had been known over the past 5-6 seasons for having one of the lowest payrolls in Major League Baseball, right? Now you have multiple different streams of income potentially coming in, and I would think it sets up for this team. One, the importance level of this year just went up, right? I'll put it to you that way as well. Now, It's on the young pups. James Wood, who we saw make his debut over the weekend, right? It's on Dylan Cruz, who's hitting the ball really well right now in spring training. Robert Hassel. It's on these guys. Make the learners be aggressive this summer. How do you do that? You go out and you compete this year. And you competed last year. I give them credit. This team last year, the over-under was set at, what, like 60.5 wins, right? And they started off the season well. They had that stretch at the quarter pole mark of the season where they were flirting with a wild card spot potentially. They got hot, but then injuries mounted, and then the bats went absolutely cold. Had the worst offense in the National League last year, one of the worst in Major League Baseball. So you go out, you bring back Josh Bell, you acquire Nathaniel Lowe. So now 3-4-5 in your lineup should have some pop to it. C.J. Abrams comes back after really taking strides last year at the plate. Hopefully the defense comes around this year for C.J. Abrams. But, like, they're an exciting young group, and I think this year is huge because if you show ownership, hey, we're maybe ahead of schedule when it comes to the rebuild from a talent perspective, you show that, and then now they've got a potential naming rights deal for the stadium, jersey sponsorship, and then the TV deal. You should have some money to spend moving forward. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens this year. And like I said, I think the new potential financial options for the Nats, the new assets that they're going to have, right, makes this regular season that much more important. Show me some growth so ownership can go spend like a madman this winter. 301-230-0980 is the number. We'll go around the National Football League with a guy, Mike Jones, who covers the NFL for The Athletic, coming up at about 3:30. When we get back, though, we'll look at some of the top stories from the weekend, including some info and news on Jets wide receiver Devontae Adams, who could potentially be free sooner rather than later. Should Washington be in on him? We'll get to that next here on the Team 980. A lot more to get to as we're in a mad sprint to 4 p.m. Eastern time. Craig Hoffman going to take you on your afternoon drive home. It's the youngest of Charles and L. Willingham riding with you, sitting in for Chris Russell. He's back with you tomorrow. Mike Jones of The Athletic going to join us in about 10 or 11 minutes. I want to get to a couple of different items before we get out of here. We'll do cleanup on aisle 3 in place of Dumb Dumb of the Day. So if you love that part of the show, sorry. I got axed today, courtesy of the youngest in charge. But really enjoyed our conversation we were just having about the Washington Nationals. I went over across the hall and was talking to Locked On Clary, the host of the Locked On Nationals podcast. And, yeah, I think the sentiments that we echoed are pretty spot on. The importance of this year just went up exponentially for the Nats. The young pups got to show, hey, we're ahead of schedule with our development. And, yeah, Mr. Lerner, you should go out and spend this summer. Speaking of spending, the Commanders spent a fifth-round pick to acquire Niners wide receiver Deebo Samuel. And my thing is this. I love the move. I think Deebo is going to resurrect his career if it was ever dead this year in Washington. But I still do think there is a major void at wide receiver, even with the addition of Deebo Samuel. I think Washington needs a bona fide outside wide receiver. And let's just say there's one that's really good that's going to be available sooner rather than later. Devontae Adams, according to several folks out there, is expected to be traded or released by the New York Jets. The trading team, if they choose to trade for Devontae Adams, which I don't think is going to happen, the trading team would have to pay out 2 years, $72.5 million. That's $36 million per over the next two. I continue to believe that he gets released. Nobody's trading for that salary. The question is this, though. Would you be in on Devontae Adams potentially in Washington? Now, I know people are going to look at it and go, ah, there's that stupid video out there where Devontae said he didn't like D.C. and he didn't like the stadium. You think anybody cares about that? Devontae Adams opposite Terry McLaurin with Deebo Samuel in the slot. I think you'd make the argument Washington had the best wide receiver core in the NFL. If somehow, some way they can make it happen, I would do it. It is the ideal, perfect fit for Washington if they brought in a guy like Devontae Adams. Because what do they need still? You brought in Debo. You've got your slot situated. But what do you still need? You need someone opposite of Terry McLaurin that is going to consistently beat man-to-man coverage and win in those one-on-one situations. Devontae Adams fits the bill perfectly for that. Now, I know what people are thinking. I really feel like people look at Devontae as a bad apple. People look at Devontae as somebody that could be potentially detrimental to a locker room and be a cancer of sorts. I don't view him that way at all. I think in this situation here in Washington, D.C., where Adam Peters, Jayden Daniels, Dan Quinn have done all of the legwork to foster the type of environment where you can afford bringing in a guy like Devontae. Because guess what? If Devontae ass don't get on track, he'll be on the first thing smoking out of D.C. Argue with somebody you love, not me. And that's just how I feel about it. It feels like, and I tweeted it out yesterday, there is an immense amount of skepticism around bringing him in. First of all, I'm not trading for him because nobody is. Depending on what that number is, Washington's in position to go overpay Tay Adams for a year. They are. Should they do it? 301-230-0980 is the question, is the number, rather. DC and Akiki, what's going on, play? How you doing?
Well, how are you, brother? I'm well, man.
I'm good, too, man. I'm happy we got Debo, baby.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Again, Doc did a great job blocking me the other day. I asked him. I know it was hypothetical. I said, if he gets released, we can get him a trade for him. But we've made the trade now.
Yeah.
I was going to use the word more physical, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I believe our receiving core just got more tough. We already know Debo plays physical. We know Terry plays physical. But hearing this dude had pneumonia and he came back and played and he lost weight and all this stuff, that's a mental toughness that the team has been talking about that we play with this year. And adding him to the team just helps solidify that. I think this not only helps the running game with another runner, but his blocking along with Terry, I think they'll feed off each other when it comes to the passing game, the running game, blocking, and all of that. It's like the mentality of the dude just hearing about him, you know?
Real quick, DC, would you be in on Devontae Adams if he's released?
Devontae Adams, if he's released, if he wants to come here, man. You know, I know a lot of people's minds have changed since they seen JD5 on the field and everything. Like you said, the comments he said, he didn't like. I heard a lot of players say that about DC because, you know, our facilities weren't the best. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd be in on him if he's released for sure. Yeah, if he wants to come here, sign him.
I agree. Appreciate your call as always, brother. Enjoy the week, man. 301-230-0980. Here's the other thing about the wide receiver spot that I think I've mentioned, but I don't know, maybe I haven't hit on it hard enough. Jayden Daniels in this offense had a tremendous amount of success last year with YMCA receivers. I mean no disrespect to Olamide Zaccheaus. I mean no disrespect to Noah Brown. But with that being said, in terms of what I bring in Devontae, it obviously cost impacts everything. If it's on the cheap and I can bring him in and I don't have to trade for him, hell yeah, I'd do it. I'm not concerned about his fit culturally here in D.C. I'm not, because I think this locker room is strong enough to where they would get him in check. What I am curious about is the mentality of the Commanders front office. You saw Jayden Daniels have success with these less than wide receivers. You don't necessarily need to go break the bank. That's why I bring up names like Darius Slayton, right, as somebody that would be interesting to me. It was just announced that the Tampa Bay Bucks not expected to franchise Chris Godwin. They still have up until the start of the new league year, though, to negotiate a deal with him, talking about a potential extension. My source in Tampa, I have a source in Tampa, continues to reiterate to me that, like, he listed it as an 85% chance that Chris Godwin gets re-signed. So, but if he isn't re-signed, Godwin would be somebody that I'd say, hey, maybe let's tango. Spotrac has him projected at getting a 3-year, $67 million extension, averaging $22.5 million per year. If you're Washington, man, I would have to believe that you can afford that. This is when the Debo thing gets interesting. They're going to pick up that option, meaning Debo's cap hit for next year is only going to be $5 million. What that means big picture for Washington is that they're going to gain, what is that, $12 million in salary cap, meaning they're listed at 64. They've really got 76 when they pick up Debo's option. So you add $22 million away from that. You go from 76 to 56. The math is mathing, is how I would put it. If they want to be that aggressive, if they want to go out and sign another guy that's a high-end name, they can do it. I think their splash decisions and their splash moves are not over. I just am curious as to whether it comes on offense or defense. Real quick here, we're going rapid fire through these calls here. We're going to get to our guy Mike Jones on the other side of the break. Jason and Laura will kick us off. Real quick, Jason, your thoughts on the Debo trade, and then would you be in on Davante Adams? 30 seconds.
Linnell, how you doing?
I'm good, brother.
Love talking to you. Dude, I'm on cloud nine. and you're right. Debo's not a wide receiver. He's a chess piece. He might run the ball as, you know, as many times as he catches the balls in some games. But I think we got an offensive guard on the outside that can block in the run game now, which is one of the things I'm the most excited about, because that dude he brings it when he blocks. And he almost looks like an offensive guard. You look at the tail end on that guy. I mean, he's got a huge ass on him. I'm so excited. I don't know about Adams. I think I would rather draft one of the speedy wide receivers and give us another young player. Yeah. But I'm not
sold on Adams. 100%
on that. I want to see defense.
For sure. I appreciate it as always. Nick is in Stafford. What's going on, Nick?
Hey, I have a quick question.
Yeah, real quick.
So Debo is like a great asset. I'm very happy about the trade. But my question is for you, sir. Why did San Fran, I know he's a free agent after 1 year. Why did San Fran only give up a fifth round pick? And
well, because the rest of the NFL knew that he was going to get released anyway, so it dropped his trade value. Appreciate the call as always. Shakur in D.C., you in on Tay Adams or no?
I am definitely not on for Tay Adams, just simply because I think our money could be, you know, spent towards like a sweat from Philly.
Yeah.
And I love the Debo acquisition. I think Debo and Cliff's offense, man, we're going to go bonkers. And as far as another receiver, I'll look at Higgins from Ohio State. I'm not sure if he'll be there in the third, but I would look at him. Appreciate the call.
Appreciate you as always. You're talking about Jaden Higgins from Iowa State, not Ohio State. He's somebody I've got my eyes on as well. 6'4", smooth route runner, big-time production. I'd be in on it. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll go around the National Football League with Mike Jones of The Athletic next. The Hoffman Show comes your way, top of the 4 o'clock hour. Craig back in the saddle. Excited to hear from him on the big news of the weekend. Debo Samuel, now a member of the Washington Commanders. The trickle-down effect that it has on the rest of their decision-making this offseason is going to be interesting. I think they clearly still need another outside wide receiver. It's the Youngest in Charge, Linnell Willingham, riding with you till 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Chris Russell back with you tomorrow. Right now, we go out to the guest hotline where we find one of my absolute faves talking all things National Football League, a veteran in the reporting game. I got Mike Jones, who covers the NFL for The Athletic. Give him a follow at By Mike Jones. What's going on, Jonesy? How you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
I'm excited. We got Debo Samuel here in our nation's capital, Mike Jones. You have been around the D.C. area when the team was not making good moves, with Dan Snyder being uber aggressive, going out and getting the over-the-hill gang. Your initial thoughts when you saw this come across your ticker Saturday evening?
Well, I think it's a move that makes a lot of sense. Obviously, we knew that they needed to add somebody to go opposite Terry McLaurin.
And we knew that there were ties to Debo from Adam Peters' time in San Francisco. So now you get a guy that, look, if he's healthy, you can move him around, use him in a lot of ways. Cliff Kingsbury will find all kinds of, you know, formations and alignments and things to take advantage of mismatches. And, you know, I, like you said, you know, as you're coming in there, I do think they still need a guy on the outside, somebody to take the lid off of the defense.
Yeah.
But you can go and get somebody in the draft. Now you have another veteran to go with Terry McLaurin. You know, obviously we'd like to see him. You know, we'll see what happens at tight end as well. But Debo is a really good first piece as they look to bolster this roster that exceeded expectations by a lot last year.
Mike, I got a two-parter for you. First, were you down in Indianapolis at the combine, my friend?
Yes.
What was the most interesting nugget that you picked up from Indianapolis?
I don't know
if you care to share. If you care to share, I don't want you to spill state secrets or anything. But
no, there was just a lot of talk about what was going to happen. You know, a lot of people were monitoring what was going to happen with Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
You know, and there were, you know, different teams that were jumping in there, and it seemed like, from what I could gather, that the Rams, you know, were still kind of like, you know, wanted him to go out and prove it, like, hey, look, we actually were giving you a pretty good deal. And so it wasn't really a surprise when he came back to them.
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of people who thought that. It was just interesting hearing different people's views on the quarterbacks in the draft, whether
yes.
it's Shedeur Sanders, you know, and things like that. You know, everybody has different opinions. There were some people who totally agreed, some people who, you know, drastically different, you know, disagreed. So, you know, it's always an interesting time, because everybody's got different opinions and there's all kinds of different rumors and things flying around. And so it'll be interesting to see in a couple of weeks how things pan out, you know, in free agency and the draft.
I had your colleague on from The Athletic, Vic Tafer, on Friday when I was on the Infinity Sports Network. And he gave some nuggets basically saying that Shedeur in some teams that he had talked to did not do very well on the whiteboard. We're now seeing quotes come out saying that he came off as brash and arrogant. What is kind of some of the insight you were able to get on how teams are viewing Cam and Shedeur at this point?
Yeah, there were people, you know, I heard as well that, you know, kind of didn't, they felt like he rubbed them the wrong way in some of the interviews. But then there were other people that I talked to that did not feel that way at all, you know, different okay. personalities and things like that. You know, I heard some people who really were like, nah, I wouldn't touch him. And I heard other people who said, look, this guy could be anywhere from like a Geno Smith type of guy. Another person said, I think he's going to be more like a Jordan Love, needs some help around him early on, but can wind up being, you know, a real impact guy. So lots of different opinions, you know, and look, he connects differently with every different person, you know, somebody just because I talk to him and don't like him don't mean that you won't like him. He
right.
just needs one team to fall in love with him. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out there with him.
Joined right now by national NFL writer for The Athletic, Mike Jones. You can follow him on the X app at By Mike Jones. The two other teams that were most aggressive in pursuing Matt Stafford, Mike, were the Raiders and the Giants. I continue to believe that neither of those two teams made sense. Can you explain from Vegas's point of view, with a roster that clearly is not ready to contend for even a division title, like, why were they so in on Matthew Stafford?
Well, I mean, look, they got a new stadium, you know, they got, you know, they're trying to keep fans in there, but their roster isn't awful. You know, when you
My
look
God.
At them, they drafted pretty well last year.
Yes,
they
I
had,
agree.
You know, three young guys in their first, you know, couple picks who were starters. And then they had along their offensive line. And then you had Brock Bowers, who was, you know, almost an all pro, you know, a second team all pro, I believe it was. And then you had a 1,000-yard receiver in Jacoby Myers. You needed, obviously, and that was throwing catching passes from Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew, you know. And so you have something to work with. Obviously, you got Max Crosby. You have some needs on defense. But if you get a quarterback masks a lot of deficiencies and then also would have made free agents, you know, be like, oh, okay, they got Matt Stafford. Maybe I want to come there. So I understand them trying to swing big right there. You know, again, it is much more appealing for the Rams situation for Stafford because
yes.
they are close. Their Super Bowl window is still there. But I definitely understood why the Raiders wanted him. Now, the Giants, they were kidding themselves. They thought that Matthew Stafford will want to go there. They, you know, yes, they have Malik Nabers, which, you know, is very attractive, but they have a lot of holes, and they're not close to contending right there. So that did not make a lot of sense of a move for me.
Let's stick on the Giants here for a second. Mike, what is your gauge on their thought process down there? Because I continue to believe, first of all, John Mara is setting them up for failure. I mean, if you should have canned them at the end of last year. They go into this season. I continue to believe the best way that Dable and Joe Shane can keep their job is by developing and grooming a young quarterback, showing progress throughout the season. Because other than that, like, if you bring in a veteran, I continue to hear they want to bring in a veteran, they want to bring in a young guy as well. The way that the offseason calendar plays itself out, Mike, is that, look, they got to get a guy that they're comfortable starting in week one in free agency, because there's no guarantee that Cam Ward or Shador will be there for them at pick number three, right?
Yeah, and even if you do get one of those guys, there's nothing saying that they're going to be ready to play right now. This is not a, you know, a slam dunk quarterback year in the draft. And so that's why they kind of wanted to get a veteran guy, you know, offer him a 2-year deal, and then draft somebody to groom behind him and then turn it over to there. You know, I think John Mara was basically like, man, you guys made this mess. I want you guys to clean it up.
Yeah.
He's a guy that does not like paying people. You know, we see some owners who they don't care. They're writing checks for, you know, three previous head coaches still. But John Mara is not like that. He wants to, you know, them to work their way out of this thing right here. You know, and we'll see what happens with them. You know, like you said, they are not close.
No.
They have, you know, the quarterback is definitely a big need, but, you know, their offensive line still needs some work. They got some, you know, holes, you know, on defense as well. So
they need a corner bad. Yeah. They need a corner bad.
Yeah, they need a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not close.
No, they are not. I want to ask you about the other team in New York, the Jets. A couple of different interesting nuggets came out about them this weekend. Their potential interest in trading up to the number one pick, I just think it's going to cost too much, so I don't even want to spend too much time on that. But did you see the Jordan Travis story, the agent coming out and saying that, yeah, the regime last year rushed him and they had to shut down his rehab, putting this year's training camp in doubt for him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know all of, you know, what actually happened with that right there. You know, yeah, an agent can say that, and then maybe it is actually true. You know, it wouldn't surprise me. They have, you know, just been a disaster on every single front right there. It is a situation where you're glad to see Glenn finally get a head coaching job, but, man, they got their work cut out for them there.
Roster's just, good, though, I would say. Of the teams that are, like, needy for a quarterback,
the roster's okay.
Yeah.
Their roster's okay. They keep saying and they keep acting like they've got really something to work with, but,
You're not buying it, huh?
No, I'm not buying it. They have not – they were not even – you know, they're not close yet. I think they're overestimating themselves, and so I don't know who they're going to get as their quarterback, but, you know –
Hey, Mike, don't we know about overestimating yourself down here in Washington? That describes the whole Bruce Allen era, my friend. We know how things went down here. Real quick before we let you go, do you think a quarterback goes 1-1, or do the Titans stick and pick with Abdul Carter?
Well, it just depends who jumps up there.
Yeah.
Because you got Carter, you got Travis Henry, you got some really intriguing people to go with, and rather than having to reach for a quarterback. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's still really early.
For sure.
You know, we got a lot of things and a lot of rumors are going to fly, a lot of things, moving pieces, before we know what this thing's going to shape up to look like.
I lied, Mike. One quick one here. Any movement on Myles Garrett? Do you think that drags into camp, or do we get some resolution closer to the draft?
No, I think they're going to try to win this stare down here.
Wow.
They don't want to lose him because they feel like they've got a decent roster. They got to get their quarterback situation figured out. But, you know, they would like to keep him. We'll see how much of a malcontent he can be. Some people I talked to said, nah, he can't really rock the boat. He's not built that way. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Well, when you're listening to Aretha Franklin and the Osley Brothers before kickoff, I don't see you as a rock the boat guy either, Mike. So I appreciate you giving us some time, my friend. We'll do it again soon.
All right, have a good one.
That is Mike Jones, national NFL reporter for The Athletic. Give him a follow at By Mike Jones. You hear that? It's Craig Hoffman's music. He's getting warmed up in the bullpen. He and Anthony Haney will take you on your afternoon drive home. We'll take a quick timeout, and we come back. Everything that we didn't get to, Nats, Caps, Lamont Roach versus Gervonta Davis, all that more coming up in cleanup on aisle three. One final segment to go before we hand things over to Craig Hoffman and Eric Flack at WSA 9. Giving us some more heat, man. We'll get to it all in a second with cleanup on aisle three.
I hope Matt's okay with it. Because I didn't really ask. What we may have missed. What we forgot. What we need to touch on. What we promoted that we didn't get to. And even if it's just a minute or two, a mention.
Clean up in aisle three.
Clean up on aisle three.
Let's get right into it. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser spoke, I think it was yesterday. Yes, I believe it was yesterday. And Christian Flores of Channel 7 News put out the story that I'm very interested in. You know, because of the current political climate in the United States and Donald Trump making several, you know, budget cuts throughout the country, D.C. is forecasted to face a $1 billion deficit due to federal workforce cuts. And Channel 7 pressing the issue saying, hey, well, if the budget, if they're facing a $1 billion budget deficit, how in the hell are they going to pay for the new RFK Stadium with taxpayer dollars? Well, that to me was a really good question. And I feel like, hey, it's what we all should be thinking about. Someone tweeted at me yesterday and said, if you're going to be successful at one thing in your life, it's going to be killing the stadium deal. I take pride in it. I don't want the stadium here. Now, I really don't want the stadium here, knowing that the city is already facing a $1 billion deficit. So Eric Flack just put it out 13 minutes ago. Quote, the D.C. budget woes won't stop RFK plans. Mayor Bowser moving forward with plans to use taxpayer money for a new Commanders football stadium on the RFK site, despite the projected $342 million budget shortfall. And the quote that she gave to Eric Flack is, who wants to look around in 4 years and see the same thing at RFK? I'm not going to call names. I'm just going to say that's your mayor. You see where her priorities are at. Can't wait to hear what Craig Hoffman has to say about that. Some other things we didn't get the opportunity to get to. We mentioned Alex Ovechkin scoring goal number 884, moving 11 shy of breaking Wayne Gretzky's all-time goal-scoring record. Caps with a housekeeping note that they snuck in there this afternoon. They inked goalie Charlie Lindgren to a 3-year, $9 million extension. General manager Chris Patrick announced the move earlier today. This move comes 5 weeks after signing Logan Thompson to a big 6-year deal worth $35 million. So the Caps have their goaltending duo locked up for the next several years. Lindgren hadn't looked bad when he's played. There was a stretch of the season earlier where he was god-awful to start, I guess. I guess you can't say god-awful. They're the best team in hockey. But
he wasn't that bad.
He wasn't as good as we he wasn't, as,
he, wasn't, he wasn't playing as well as Logan Thompson was playing, which is what people were talking about.
That was the barrier. That was the standard that he was being held to. He is in the fold, though, here in D.C. for the next 3 years at $3 million annually. The Nats, the Nats were in action over the weekend with their spring training slate. We saw the debut in the spring of James Wood as well as Mackenzie Gore. We got the news earlier today that the Nationals got out of the Masson TV deal, and they're expected to start negotiations with the Monumental Sports Network. I assume that's who they will start negotiating with. I don't want to report that. That's not official. But I expect that to be the case. They can start negotiating as soon as 2026. And then Brett Knight of Forbes also reporting that the Nats are working on selling their ballpark naming rights as well as a jersey sponsorship, a move that could bring in north of $20 million annually in revenue. So just a massive day for the Washington Nationals. And it puts more onus on this season, man. It raises the importance level of this season. Young pups got to play well to show ownership that, hey, you should be spending money. Big fight happened over the weekend in the world of boxing. I don't really normally care about boxing, but it was important to the DMV area. Gervonta Tank Davis, 30-0 with 28 knockouts entering this weekend. He fights out of Baltimore, Maryland. He went up against Lamont Roach, who was 16-0. He fights out of Washington, D.C. Just a super controversial finish to that fight. It ends in a draw. And Tank was the massive betting favorite entering this matchup. Lamont Roach, one of the young up-and-coming fighters out of this area. I don't even want to call him young and up-and-coming, man. He's got, I said the record was 16-0, way off. 25-2 is the record for Lamont Roach. So he throws his hands, as the youngins like to say. Gervonta Davis took a knee in the ninth round, and referee Steve Wilkes decided not to score it as a knockdown. Davis post-fight said that he had got his hair twisted over the weekend and that the grease had leaked into his eye. And if you're anybody that's had your hair twisted up or you've sweat while wearing products in your hair, it makes your eyes burn. Imagine getting jabbed in your face, your vision gets blurry, and then your eyes are burning at the same time. The score, two judges scored the fight 114-114. A third judge scored it 115-113 in favor of Gervonta Davis. Here is Lamont Roach post-fight talking about how he wasn't credited with the knockdown.
Man, I'm not. Honestly, I thought I should have won without that being counted a knockdown. Look, I ain't the ref. I ain't really, you know what I'm saying? Like, if he had the white sweat out of his eye, he had the white sweat out of his eye. But the rules do state, if you voluntarily take a knee, then that's an automatic A count. But it is what it is. I wasn't relying on that. I was relying on what I was doing in there. I think I was taking control. I think I was landing more shots. I think I was landing more power shots. And I thought I was doing my thing. So I'm not really that frustrated about that. But if that was kind of an knockdown, I would win the majority decision.
Strong words from Lamont Roach. I think a rematch is coming. Both fighters called for it after the fight. We mentioned the Nats starting to, you know, begin negotiations on a stadium naming rights deal, and they're trying to get a jersey sponsorship as well. These numbers via our guy Grant Paulson. Nats are one of nine teams in Major League Baseball without a stadium naming rights deal. So, and they're just one of seven that don't have a sponsorship on their jersey. Financially, the times were rough. They're about to get a hell of a lot better. Appreciate you all joining us. Big thank you to Mad Max. Big thank you to Matt Mayoko. Big thank you to Mike Jones, as well as you all on the phones. Chris Russell back with you tomorrow. The Hoffman Show comes your way next.